The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, this is Bruce Valanche. Remember on Hollywood Squares, the guy to the left of Whoopi, if that's possible? I'm listening to John Orlando on the PVD cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 263. I hope you're doing well out there, and I sincerely thank you for checking out this episode. It's a fun one, but before I introduce my guest, I'd like to touch on a topic or a situation that happened just a couple of days ago. And I can't believe that this news slipped past me. It actually took a week for me to find out about this. And I'm talking about the death of Hugh Keyes Byrne, who was a very talented actor. He passed away December 1st at the age of 73 years old. In my opinion, he played one of the greatest villains in all of cinema. He was the toe cutter in 1980's Mad Max. And he returned as a different character some 30-odd years later in Mad Max Fury Road, playing Immortan Joe. And while Immortan Joe was a scary dude and he was a great villain, there's a special place in my heart for the toe cutter. I remember as a kid turning on the TV and flipping around the dial, and I stopped on one of those UHF channels, Channel 22 as a matter of fact. It was a Sunday afternoon and they decided to play Mad Max, and I sat there glued to the TV. And to be honest, probably I was like 8 or 9 years old, probably shouldn't have maybe been watching that movie. I don't know. You know, I can guarantee you that my folks did not know I was watching it. I think that with the violence and whatnot that was in that film, I probably would have been told to turn it off. But nonetheless, I was absorbed and just took in this film. And Mad Max is a favorite of mine. I love the Mad Max franchise, but the first one to me is the best because of just a rawness to it that just captivated me. And you played a very important role playing the antagonist for Mad Max, the toe cutter who had all those great lines in the movie and who was like somewhat foppish but also menacing at the exact same time. So I just want to throw it out there that I can't believe it took me a week to find out that Hugh Keyes Byrne had passed away. Godspeed, sir. And I will always, always, always remember your performance as the toe cutter. All right, so let's talk about my guest that's joining me here on episode 263. It is Billy Van Zandt, who has been an actor, a producer, a playwright. He has produced over, I think, 24 off-Broadway plays, including Love, Sex, and the IRS, Drop Dead, You've Got Hate Mail, The Senator Wore Pantyhose, a ton of them. And he was also a writer and a producer for many television shows, such as Martin, The Uglies, The Wayans Brothers, Newhart. And he's even done some acting, as having a role in Jaws 2 and Star Trek The Motion Picture. So he's got such a well-rounded Hollywood career. And so we're going to talk about, you know, writing plays and producing TV shows and being in movies and his partnership with Jane Milmore. They created so much great entertainment in a partnership that lasts almost 50 years. So there's so much to cover with Billy. So with that, I'm going to take care of one quick bit of business, and that is to let you know that this episode is being brought to you by World's Greatest Comics. They're a great sponsor of the PVD cast, and they're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio, and they got every single thing comic book fans need. They've got single issues, graphic novels, collections, tons of back issues, Whatever you need, they've got. So you should stop by the store and say hi to Jeff and all the fine folks over at World's Greatest Comics. But I understand maybe you're not in Central Ohio and that's a heck of a road trip. Well, you could still check out the store. Just go over to the website, wgcomics.com, or you can find them on Facebook. Just search for at WGComics. And I really do appreciate World's Greatest Comics being a great sponsor of the PVD cast. It really means the world to me, and I appreciate it so much. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Billy Van Zandt. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me this evening via Uber conference, Mr. Billy Van Zandt. Billy, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. This is my first Uber conference, by the way.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Yeah. Well, I like this software. It works very well for me. I've had it for a couple of years, so it seems to be a little more reliable than, say, Zoom or any of those others out there. So
I don't know how any of them work. They point me at stuff and I talk. That's
Yes. Well, you're a playwright, an actor, a producer. You're a man of many talents. But let's start things off real quick with your background. So you grew up in New Jersey.
Yes.
And what was your family life like growing up in Jersey?
It was a very normal middle-class family. My father was an ex-Marine who worked as an engineer. My mother ran a doctor's office. Every other house on the block looked the same. You know, there were two styles of the, you know, one had the upstairs, one didn't. So every other house looked the same pretty much. And whenever I hear the Monkees song Pleasant Valley Sunday, that sounds like my neighborhood to me.
Okay.
my brother and all his friends had garage bands. So they were literally in somebody's garage around the neighborhood playing, and I'd be in the backyard putting on shows and a little of everything in our neighborhood. You know, we had the Italian family next to us, the Irish family next to them, the German family next to them. So it was a nice mix of a bunch of different cultures.
I'm glad you mentioned your brother, Stephen. Who was a very talented actor as well and a big musician. So you came from an environment where your parents really supported that creativity. Would that be accurate?
Well, that'd be sort of accurate. My father hated the fact that we wanted to go into show business, hated it. Luckily for me, my brother's 7 years older than me, so he went through a lot of crap before I came along and went, I'm going into show business. And they went, yeah, okay. So, according to my father, I don't want to paint him like it wasn't like the great Santini or anything, but as far as he was concerned, everybody in show business was a bum or a drunk or a loser, you know, and he didn't want us to do that. I think I was on maybe my second TV show, you know, making a decent amount of money, and he was still trying to talk me into, you know, getting a job at the A&P because they had a good pension. It's like, Dad, I'm doing okay. So we got a work ethic from my father. You know, he didn't care what we did as long as we did it better than anybody else was pretty much the gist of it. And no time off, you know, was for losers basically. So we have a very strong work ethic in our family. In overdrive, we've probably overdone it, and then along with that was my mother, who gave us a nice security blanket. You know, if things don't work out, you can always come home, and you know, that sort of thing. So it was a good mix, and but we had no show business in our family at all. Steven really, he was the first, and he really didn't hit until I was graduating high school, and I was already working in the theater by then too. So, and then my sister's a writer as well. So, I don't know where we got it from, but we got it.
And that's all that counts, right?
I guess, except if I have to find some other line of work at this point, I don't even know what I would do. I've never worked outside of show business in my entire life, which is embarrassing. I'm kind of proud at the same time, but if I have to go find something else to do, I don't know what that would be.
So you've done a lot of TV work. As you mentioned, you've been in several different series. You've been in a couple of different films. But the one thing that I found very interesting, and if you don't mind me asking, I'm very, very clueless on how the process begins. You helped to develop the Wayans Brothers show and Suddenly yeah. Susan.
Yeah. So
take me and the listeners through, how does that process happen in Hollywood? And how, what was your role in facilitating that deal and whatnot? Could you just walk us through it?
Well, three of the shows that we did sort of were in the same category. Martin, the first season of Martin Lawrence's show, the Wayans Brothers, and Suddenly Susan. All three of those had already been done as not necessarily pilots, but presentations, which would be like a 15-minute performance that they film just to see if it would work. And there were different showrunners on all three of those jobs, and they weren't working out. Two of them weren't working out. And one of them, they just brought us in to partner with the guy that created the show. That was Martin. And then you basically, you have to find what makes that person funny and then write towards it. We've done a lot of shows with stand-up comedians, and our job is to take what they've been doing for 10, maybe 20 years of being their own writer, producer, star, and you find out what makes that person funny, and then you write towards it, and you surround them with people who are better actors, really, that sort of ups their game, because they weren't actors before they met us. They were stand-up comedians, whole different animal. But if you surround a stand-up comedian with a bunch of good theater actors, the stand-up comedian learns pretty quickly how to work. Ray Romano, the first couple episodes of Everyone Loves Raymond, much different than he was as the years went on, because they surrounded him with good people. So we've tried to do that as well. But with Martin, I'll start with Martin. John Bowman and Martin created the show. They did about a 15-minute presentation. They hired us, and then John asked Jane and me to take their 15-minute script and flesh it out so it would, when we reshot it, it would become the right length of a TV show. So we created the Garrett Morris character and his sidekick, Sean, in the radio show. And then once you get the pilot up and running, then you have a whole writing staff of people that will do each episode. And your job as a writing staff is to imitate the writing of the guy who created the show. That's your whole job. You may write brilliantly, but you have to really learn why the creator of the show spoke a certain way. And you have to imitate that, so all the episodes end up sounding the same. You don't want different voices on each episode. So for Martin, we did the first season of that. We really were responsible for mostly the male-female Martin and Gina relationship. And then Jane and I created a bunch of little characters, Otis the security guard and Roscoe the little snot-nosed kid and all that stuff that Martin would play. And then after that season was over, we went on to something else. The Wayans brothers was sort of cruel. We were told that the show was supposed to air on what was going to be the brand new WB network. So there was a start date that could not be moved. And they found out 4 weeks prior to that, that the guy they had hired didn't have a bunch of scripts for them to read, and they were panicking. So they said he was being replaced by us. So we went over to the studio to meet the Wayans brothers for the first time. We walked into a room, and the two of them were sitting there with another guy. And he said, "Can I help you?" I said, "Hi, I'm Billy Van Zandt. This is Jane Millmore. We're the new showrunners." And the other guy said, "Oh, then I guess I'm fired." And that's how they made us fire this poor guy. So he went home, and then we had to, over the weekend, come up with the premise of the show, because there were no scripts ready to go. And every story that they had worked on with this writing staff, they were all for different shows. None of them, nobody had talked to each other, it looked like. So we came up with what would be the Wayans brothers. The first episode we did was Goop, Here It Is, with Gary Coleman as the guest star. And that was our version of Chef of the Future from The Honeymooners. But we didn't have time to really think this through. So it was like, okay, we're doing The Honeymooners. Sean's going to be Ralph. Marlon's going to be Art Carney. And so we sort of started off that way, and we got to calm down a little bit as we went. But we had sort of created a new genre when we did Martin, in that it was sort of a sitcom, but it was also melded with sketch comedy in the middle of the sitcom, where Martin would play all the crazy characters. So we did the same thing with the Wayans brothers. The cold opens were always a little out there and a little crazy. And we did that one for a year too. Suddenly Susan with Brooke Shields was a different situation in that it was a drama that she wanted to do, written by a very talented guy. And NBC said, we want to do this. We want to do it with her, but we don't want it to be a drama. We want it to be a sitcom. So the guy who created the show did his attempt at a sitcom, and they weren't happy with it. So they brought Jane and me in, and we weren't prepared to work on the show. We were actually about to go back east and do a play. And they said, well, you just go give your notes to the head of the network. And I said, yeah, sure. So we walk into a meeting, and suddenly the head of the network is there, and there are also like 20 other people with pads and pens. And Jane and I are looking at each other like, what are we walking into here? And the president of the network stood up and said, we want to thank Billy and Jane for coming in and taking over the show. So again, we got screwed into doing something we weren't prepared to do. And so that one, literally, we had a weekend. We said okay, because we didn't have a choice. We said okay on a Thursday or a Friday. And by Monday, we had to have created a show, wrote it, cast it, and fixed the sets that weren't right for the show we were doing. And 2 weeks to the day from when they conned us into that meeting, we turned in the finished product, and the show got on the air after Seinfeld. It was a real big deal. So those are the three weird ones that I worked on in terms of no notice, last minute. You don't quite know what you're walking into. There are other shows where the normal way it works is you have 3 months to come up with what you want to go sell to the network. Once the network buys it, you have another 3 months to write the script and cast it. And then you film the pilot, and then you still have time to sort of figure out what the rest of the season's going to be. And then you come back with a new writing staff, and, you know, but we did all, like, Suddenly Susan, we did that in 2 weeks, the whole thing. Wayans Brothers, we did it in 4 weeks. And Martin, half of it was already written, so we did that in a week, too.
Well, you've mentioned her a couple of times. Could you talk a little bit about your partnership with Jane Milmore?
Absolutely. Jane and I met in high school. She was at Keensburg High School. I was at Middletown High School. And we, our schools competed in a theater competition. And we met at that theater competition in our hometown. And the producer of that theater cast Jane and me to work together in a Neil Simon comedy, Star Spangled Girl, the following summer. And we immediately started dating and started off that way. And then we broke up, and then we dated, and we broke up, and we dated, and it went on for a ridiculous amount of times until we finally sort of grew up, I guess would be the short answer there. And but we were together 46 years, and that included, we weren't married, but it was basically included a very bloody divorce, and then we got back together as friends. Then we got back together as best friends and sort of soulmate best friends, all without missing one single day of work in 46 years. That made for some very interesting scripts, let me tell you. but she was great. She was great. I thought she'd far outlast me. She was the healthiest little thing you ever saw and the toughest little thing you ever saw 2 years ago, I guess now. She turned yellow overnight. We didn't know what was wrong. She went to the doctor, and the next day they said you had pancreatic cancer. Oh. And she had, she fought for 15 months, and we kept thinking this is a misdiagnosis. They're going to find out what this is, because she's the healthiest thing we ever knew, you know. After chemo, after chemo, after chemo, nothing worked. And she lasted 15 months with that. And the entire time she was sick, we worked together 2-3 days a week. Even in the last couple of weeks when I thought she was really bad, she wanted to work because she thought this is just, this is going to pass. This is a bump in the road and she'll get over it. So it was rough seeing her go. And it's been a very surreal year because we haven't even been able to have a memorial for her. So it's been a very strange grieving process, but I have a lot of half-written scripts that she and I started this entire year, or last year. So I'll still be working on those, and we've got 23 plays together that are done all over the world. So she's still out there, you know.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Billy for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. It's the one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, back issues, posters, comic book supplies. They got it all for you. And if you want to make sure you don't miss a single issue of your favorite comic, sign up for the world-class pull system and you'll never miss a single issue. Once that comic hits the wall, they pull it and hold it for you at the register till you come by and pick it up. So check them out online at wgcomics.com, or you can find them on Facebook. Just search for at WG Comics. Or better yet, if you're in the Central Ohio area, stop on over to the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And let them know that you heard about the store from me, John Orlando, on the PVD cast. Well, let's talk about some of those Broadway plays, off-Broadway plays, excuse me. First, real quickly, just for the audience, I'm just going to ask, can you define what's the difference between off-Broadway and on-Broadway, please?
The size of the theater.
That's it.
That's all it is. Once you get past, I'm going to blank on this now. I think once you get past 599 seats, it's a Broadway show. It has nothing to do with location. It has to do with the size of the theater.
Okay. So for all you that were curious about that term, there you go. So you've created, as you mentioned, tons of plays. I mean, Love, Sex, and the IRS. You've got Hate Mail, Sweethearts, The Senator Wore Pantyhose, Drop Dead. I mean, I could sit here and name them for the next 15 minutes. But let me ask you, Billy, which three or four would you recommend to somebody that's totally new to your work?
Love, Sex, and the IRS was our first. It's the broadest farce. I think we started off that way. And that's the one that we're probably most known for. So I'd probably say that. You've Got Hate Mail is done all over the world, and that one has had the widest appeal. But for the people who have, a lot of people, if the theater does one of our shows, they usually come back and do three or four or five of them. And then suddenly comes along You've Got Hate Mail, and it's a whole different show. It's a little more adult. The language is a little coarser. And I've had a couple people just be like offended by, you wrote this after you wrote all those other things. Yeah, we did. That was the story of Jane's divorce told through emails, and it was pretty funny. And it's been done. It's running all over the world. So that one, different kind of show, but I would say that one. A show called Drop Dead, which we did off Broadway, and then I did it out here in Los Angeles. We had a great cast out here. We had Rosemarie from the Dick Van Dyke Show, Adrienne Barbeau, who I eventually married, Barney Martin from Seinfeld, Donnie Most from Happy Days, Craig Bierko, who's on Broadway and everything. It was a great show. And that one's done all over the place too. And that's a campy murder mystery show. All the shows are different. We tried it. The first probably five shows we did were all formulaic farces. You know, somebody once said, you know, if you put sex in the title, it sells. So we changed our first show to Love, Sex, and the IRS. So, you know, and it's true. People did it. So after about five shows, I felt like we were a little stale doing the same sort of thing, even though they were fun. So we started veering off into doing other things. And one of which was a musical, Merrily We Dance and Sing, which was just the funniest thing in the world. And then we did a Marx Brother musical called Night at the Nutcracker. We did a silent movie, slapstick silent movie live on stage off Broadway, which was crazy. And, you know, had a hundred custard pies fight at the end of the show. So we've done a little of everything.
Okay. But I like those three. So you said Love, Sex, and the IRS. You've got Hate Mail, Drop Dead, that if you're new to your catalog, those would be the three to go with first.
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the book that you wrote. It's called Get in the Car, Jane, Adventures in TV Wasteland. Could you give us a little summary on the book? without giving too much away.
It's a memoir of all the TV shows that Jane and I either created, wrote, or produced. Every chapter is a different show, and I take you through our entire history of that show. It's a lot of gossip. It's a lot of hurdles that you have to go through as a writer to get something on the air, the egos you have to deal with, and the fun of it all. So every chapter is a different TV show, and by the time you finish the book, you get a sense of what it was the creator of a sitcom actually does for a living, in addition to all the funny stories. So a lot of colleges are using it for their writing students, and then other people are just, you know, it was a good beach read, you know, because you don't have to, you can read one chapter and come back to it 3 weeks from now and read the second chapter. It doesn't matter. But these are all stories that I used to love telling about my career and about these shows. So these are, as I say, these are the kind of stories I would tell at dinner parties to get laughs. So, and the response has been great. We for a second and a half, I was number one on the Amazon for a brief second, but I'll take it. You know, I'll take that 1 second.
And you have listed in the description quite a few people that you have stories about. I mean, Lucille Ball, Alan Arkin, Andrew Dice Clay, which can I just ask, as a kid that was in high school when Andrew Dice Clay hit like a sledgehammer with his stand-ups. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Do you have just one cool little side note about Andrew Dice Clay?
He was a really sweet guy who just loved his family and just happened to say raunchy things to make a living, you know. But I had fun with him. He was, I'll tell one quick little story. Every we would work Monday through Friday, film the show on Friday. And on Thursdays, he was supposed to have the script memorized. But every Thursday, there was always some problem on the set with Andrew. And we never knew what the hell was going on. It's like, what? He's talking in a Spanish accent today. And then we'd have to stop and go down there and talk to him. After a while, I realized it was because he had to have his lines memorized. And since he didn't, he was causing some problem on the set to give him more time to learn the lines. And so one week we had Elaine Stritch on the show, Broadway legend and legendary for being difficult too. And she was on the set, and she was a handful, I will say. And I go down to the set to deal with her at one point, and I see Andrew sitting politely in a little chair. And I went over to him. I said, "What's the deal with you?" I said, "Normally, you know, you show up late, you don't know your lines, you know, and today you're on time, you know all your, you know the entire script, you're sitting there quietly, what's the deal?" And he pointed to Elaine Stritch and said, "Well, there's only room for one."
That's good.
But I enjoyed working with him a lot. It was a good show. We got canned prematurely. I think he offended somebody at the network, and suddenly they just pulled us. We were doing quite well too, but he was fun. I enjoyed him.
Where can folks get the book, by the way?
You can get it at Amazon. You can get it at Barnes & Noble. They'll order it, and you can get it on my website, VanZantMillmore.com. I think they're selling hardcover copies on the website, and. It's really a fun read. I'm really proud of it. And I'm thinking now, okay, what's the sequel going to be? Do I do the films next? Do I do the theater next? But I enjoyed writing it so much, I want to do another one.
Well, you know what? I have a few more questions here real quick. And since you touched on it, let's talk about a couple of your appearances, because I was curious that I know that you had a role in Jaws 2 and in Star Trek, the motion picture.
Yes.
Both of those properties have a very big and, dare I say, rabid fan base.
They do.
Yeah. Have you had any run-ins with some uber fans of either one of those franchises?
Everybody I found who are fascinated with those two films, I've been really sweet. So I've talked to a lot of people, but no, I haven't had any weird stories. The only thing that I thought was funny, as soon as Jaws 2 opened, I went to my local theater, and they were nice enough. They put my name on the marquee, even though I had a little role in it and stuff. And this woman came up to me and said, "Oh, you're in Jaws 2. Will you sign this for my son?" I said, "Yeah, sure." So I signed the autograph. "Will you sign this one for my daughter?" I said, "Yeah, sure." And I signed another one. And or my neighbors are going to want some too. "Will you sign some for them?" And I signed about 6-7 things for this woman. And I said, "So are you going to see Jaws 2?" And she said, "No, we're going to go see Grease because John Travolta is better than you." That was my introduction to celebrity.
Wow, that's harsh.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Wow. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Jeez.
But no, I'm still friends with all the guys from Jaws 2. We were, that was 11 months on that movie. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of us, it was our first movie. So it's almost like it's our graduating class from high school, and we get together every once in a while. A couple of years ago, Tom Dunlop, who played Timmy in the movie, was coming out to Los Angeles. He said, let's have dinner. I said, sure. I said, you know, I was going to have dinner with Gigi Vorgan, who's also in the movie, and I'll call her and she'll join us. And he said, great. And I hung up the phone and I thought about it and I started making phone calls. And within 48 hours, when Tom walked into dinner, every living member of the cast and the crew were sitting in the restaurant. It was fantastic. Lorraine Gary, the Sid Sheinberg, who ran Universal, Jeannot Swark, who directed it, Carl Gottlieb, who wrote it, all the teenagers from the film, our stunt coordinator was there. We had a ball, and we had picked up like it had, you know, been yesterday since we'd all seen each other. So it was really fun.
That's cool. Well, last quick question here, actually kind of a side note, and then we'll talk about social media, websites, and all that stuff real quick, Billy.
Okay.
You won an NAACP Image Award for your work on Martin and the Uglies. How does it feel to win such a prestigious award for your writing?
Well, you know, it's not something you think of when you're writing a script. That's for sure. You're just working. You're just doing the show. And the funny thing was when we got the People's Choice Award for Martin, and Whoopi Goldberg was one of the presenters at this thing. And the phrase, you go girl, had, I'm ashamed to say we introduced that on Martin and it took over the country. but somebody from the audience yelled, you go girl, to Whoopi Goldberg at the time. And I guess she hadn't seen our show because she thought she was being heckled. So that was interesting. But in terms of winning the awards, you know, you don't do it for that. And it was really nice. We didn't go to the NAACP Image Awards. We went to the People's Choice Award and we went to the Emmy Award, which we didn't win. But you know, I've got a lot of friends with the Emmys and the Golden Globes sitting on their thing on their mantles, and it's like, well, I sure would like just one of those things. But you know, it's not something you think about. It's not something you really work for.
Did you come up with any other cool catchphrases? Because I was absolutely floored by that admission that you just made.
Well, I'll tell you how that started. It was so bizarre. John Bowman, who created the show, he and I talk about this all the time, and no one's ever picked up on this. When we did Martin, you did it like a play. One take for every scene, straight through. If you make a mistake, you keep going, because that's how he liked to work. That's how we like to work. I learned that on the Bob Newhart show. And in one of the shows, I got to go back and figure out which one this was. Martin blanked on his line, and he was in the middle of a sentence. And it was, you. I can't remember what the sentence was. You go, blah, blah. It was supposed to be like 10 more words in it, comma, girl, at the end of it. And he just blanked and said, you go, girl. And the audience laughed because he was so sweet and sincere about it. And John and I immediately looked at each other and we went, that's staying in the script. That's hilarious. So we put it in the next script, and suddenly, you know, it was in all the scripts. And suddenly it was on Time and Newsweek, and, you know, everybody's using the expression. And I was like, oh, God, look what we started. Look what we ruined the English language. But to us, when he delivered it, he sounded like Joe Besser from Abbott and Costello and the Three Stooges. It was hilarious to us for that reason. So, no, Martin, he thought of it and he did it. But other catchphrases, every other sentence on Martin was a catchphrase that caught on. I can't even think of any of them now, but they're in every episode. but we didn't, you don't really think about doing catchphrases. The funny thing was on the Andrew Dice Clay show, he insisted he wanted a catchphrase. And we said, but Andrew, you know, it's got to be organic or it doesn't belong in the script. So he tried cramming in, it's a touchy situation, Alice. And he would do that in almost every script about the second half of the season. And I said, Andrew, the way you're using it, it doesn't make any sense. So we kept cutting it out of the show because he would say it in places where it's like, do you know what the meaning of the sentence is? It doesn't sound like it. And I noticed in a couple of things he did afterwards, he tried cramming it in there too. But it's like, okay. But no, it was never an intention to create a catchphrase. Those are, if they happen, if they're good and they happen by accident, I think.
All right. Billy, let's talk about social media, website, and whatnot, so folks can follow you online.
All right. VanZantMillmore.com will bring you to all the information about our plays and our films and our, what else do I do, TV and the book and all that stuff. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. I have no idea what the handles are, so just look me up and you'll find me. I'm the only one out there with my name. Mostly the website, or even if you go to Amazon, you can probably reach me through that too.
Yep, there you go. The Book of Killers, once again, is Get in the Car, Jane, Adventures in TV Wasteland. As Billy said, you could get it at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, probably your local book retailer, if those things still exist. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to tell anymore.
Really.
Or available at the website as well. Billy, thank you so very much for coming on. I really, really do appreciate it. It's been a blast.
Thank you. I had fun too. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Billy Van Zandt. I had a blast talking to Billy. When you have an episode like this as a podcaster, it just gives you, you know, the warm feeling all over that, man, it was such a fun conversation and it went so smoothly. And I appreciate Billy taking some time out of his busy schedule to sit down and chat with me. Now I need to let you know where you can contact me if you have a question or concern, or you just want to chat. One of the three. You can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PBDMVP. You can leave me a message on the Facebook and Instagram feeds for the podcast. Just look for @PBDcast. And heck, you can even email me if you want, johnorlando@PBDcast.com. Now, maybe you know somebody that would love to listen to this episode. Tell them that there's a lot of different ways that they can get the PBDcast. First of all, PBDcast.com is the online home of yours truly. It's probably the easiest way to get episodes. But they're also available throughout all of those major podcasting platforms such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio app, etc., etc. Just go to the search bar of your favorite platform, type in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, and you're sure to find it. And once you listen to an episode, please rate and review. That helps me out in the algorithm. Make sure you subscribe so you never miss an episode. And you know what? Tell some friends about it. I really, really would appreciate it. And don't forget, every Monday night through the Facebook page of the podcast, I do a live broadcast where I share this week's episode as a kind of a watch party, if you want to call it that, where people can interact with me. You should definitely check it out. It's over at PVDcast on Facebook every Monday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Come on over. It's a great time. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I thank you once again for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Following has been a production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2020.